Welcome, Lund Loyalists, YouTubers watching on John Lund Unleashed and the Bay Area Sports Collective, those watching on X and Instagram and listening on Apple and Spotify. It's John Lund Unleashed and johnlundunleashed.com. Brought to you by Riopel Cosmetic Surgery and Laser Center. Right now featuring amazing stem cell technology. For all your pain and for the guys, check out the latest in low T and testosterone therapy to make you feel like yourself again. Riopel Cosmetic Surgery and Laser Center at riopelcosmetic.com. Now, all juiced up and ready to go. Here's Johnny.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Happy Saturday. Sorry, I am tardy today. I had a few things to get out of the way, but people were hitting me up on X going, dude, you got a show? You didn't tell us you didn't have a show. Yeah, we're rolling. Saturday edition, you can see right there, Steph Curry, he's back. Justin Verlander in the right-hand corner there. He's going to the mound. I'm pretty excited about that. We are just over 48 hours from not having to talk to BA as far as movement is concerned. Is he a mover or he's staying? I think he's staying. Pretty steadfast with that. There is Will Campbell. I just said on Friday, just because of that picture right there, I didn't really want a 35-year-old, Rosie O'Donnell's not 35, Manning right tackle for the 49ers, but I may have to amend that as you see the Matt Miller seven-round mock, and I actually went through that, and I'm going to go through it with you. So we got a lot to do on a Saturday. That's why we can't take weekends off. Marco Luciano hits a bomb last night. Steph Curry talks after the Warriors win. Weird how that happens, how Steph Curry returns and the Warriors play well and win. So we'll get into those conversations in a minute. As you can see right there, even if Monday through Friday, we're here at 8 a.m. We are live right now on X at John Lund Radio. So you're watching on X. Happy Saturday. I hope you're doing great. Maybe you're running some errands. Remember, you can always take us in the car, by the way. You can always run all these things through your car. Some people were asking me the other day, like, you know, I'd love it to go through the car. You can do X through the car. You can do YouTube through the car. You can do any of those things. So if you want to take us with us or take us with you, that's great. We're on Twitch this morning, Bay Area Sports Collective on YouTube. So if you want to go over there, make sure you are subscribed, because not only on John Lund Unleashed should you subscribe, like, tell all your friends, but also on Bay Area Sports Collective, where I am, the John Lund Unleashed show, Pauly Mack, which of course, Pauly and Creative Tony, they're doing a great job with their show, and Tom Tolbert. You never know who Tolbert's going to have in the backyard. So make sure that you subscribe there. Bay Area Sports Collective on YouTube, as well as John Lund Unleashed. And you can hit me up on Facebook, friend request me if you want to, John Lund and John Lund Unleashed. Go over there and give that show page a like so we can grow that community as well. For everything Unleashed, very simple, one place, all the links are there, stories are there, blog is there, archived shows, podcasts, all those things at johnlundunleashed.com. We've also got gear over there if you want to check that out. So any of those things, johnlundunleashed.com, in one fell swoop, you can do just about everything. So good morning to everybody. Maybe if you're on the East Coast, by the way, because I saw that East Coast already checked in. 1:30 on the East Coast, 10:30 Pacific. Thanks for joining us on this Saturday, episode 101. I would love for, by the way, a beautiful day in the East Bay today. Would love a 101 drive, but very busy. Wife out of town, as I have told you already. Wife is out of town. I have multiple responsibilities before she returns tomorrow. So I'm on that all day long after the show. But, well, and Verlander pitches at 1:10 today. So I gotta see Verlander, 1:10 Pacific in Cincinnati. So I'm excited to see that today. So we'll get into that. But number one on the list, Steph Curry is back for the Warriors. And miraculously, the Warriors win with his return. We'll update you on the standings now. The Clippers and T-Wolves do keep pace. So they keep the pressure on the Warriors. Justin Verlander, as I said, goes today. Marco Luciano goes deep because everybody's going to have an eye on him. Could he be kind of what Ramos was last year, in which Ramos was out of camp early like Luciano was, and all of a sudden he came in. We had kind of just said, well, he's done. And I don't think anybody's saying that Luciano's done. It's just that he was a shortstop. He tried to be a second baseman. He tried to be, and then it was like, dude, he's a DH. And now he's in the outfield, so maybe he can give him a little punch. But he had a nice oppo shot last night for Sacramento. So we'll talk about that real quickly. I watched the A's last night. Now, look, I know the A's aren't getting a lot of pub, and I know the A's aren't going to get a lot of eyes. And if I bring up the A's, people are like, I'm out of here. But they've got a kind of a funky, fun team to watch. And I watched them last night. Max Muncy, not that Max Muncy, hit his first career home run. And they're kind of a cool offensive team. Brent Rooker went deep. And I did put the curse on Brent Rooker when I said that, because my son is in Vegas, I put the a couple of shekels down on Brent Rooker to lead the American League in home runs at plus 2,500. And he had struck out his first four and then last night, fifth at bat of the season. And I'm like, oh boy, I put the juju on him. But then he bounced back, hits a home run, a two-run shot to give him a lead, and they never looked back. And that was a fun game to watch. No Giants last night. It was flipping channels. And I was going between that and the tournament. And that was, by the way, tournament was great last night. Houston with that awesome inbounds play. But the guy had an offensive foul before that, and they actually should have turned the ball over. But whatever. I'm not a Houston nor Purdue fan, so it doesn't matter to me. But that was a great inbounds play. Watched the tournament last night, so it was a great Friday night. Wife was out of town. He did what we weren't supposed to do, ate bad food, drank beer, and watched the tournament. It was amazing. And then we've got the Miller mock draft. So I told you this yesterday. And before I go out and say hello to everybody and good morning to everybody. So I said this, let me see if I have, I know I have it on my screen here. So yesterday, I saw this late, right before the show was about to start. I'm like, yeah, to do that right, I've got to get all his picks and I got to put them on the screen and we got to talk about him and all that kind of stuff. So Matt Miller does a really nice job for ESPN, and there's 257 picks, as you can see there, in this year's 2025 NFL draft. And so what I did was, is I screenshotted him, which is probably illegal because you're supposed to pay for this stuff, which I do. I pay it for you. And so we're going to go over his picks, his seven-round mock. And there's a lot of picks for the 49ers. Some I really, really like. Some I'm like, don't know if I'd go in that direction. But they're good stuff. And we'll get into that conversation as well. 48 hours, just over 48 hours on BA because April 1st, they owe him that money. So I guess it could go through April 1st. But I still don't think he's going to get traded. I've said that the entire time because you look at it from the other GM standpoint. And I just don't know what they would gain, especially this close to the draft. You're giving up $22.8 million in a check that you've got to write right away, over $25 million in salary for the season for a guy who may not be ready until the middle of the season. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense, especially from a timing standpoint. Like if you're a desperate team, and let's say that you lost a receiver for the year or something like that in training camp, then you could look at Ayuk, something like that, after the draft. But before the draft, you're all excited. You got all these guys on your board that are receivers. They're going to be cheap. And you're like, well, I'm not going to trade for a receiver now. I'll just draft one at this point. We're on the verge of April. April's the draft. And so it's like, we'll just draft a wide receiver. So I think the timing's poor. I don't think a smart GM would pay $22.8 million for Brandon Ayuk. The receiver position has been devalued this offseason, unlike last offseason. So there's a lot of reasons why I just don't think it's going to happen. It could. I doubt it. And then random, if you're not new around here, I just go off on tangents. Things send me on tangents. Maybe it's something that somebody says in a chat room that sends me in a certain tangent. What we'll do on the show, as I always talk about it, is we'll go down the freeway like we're on a road trip. We'll get off for certain exits. That's the randoms. We'll get back on. Now, how long we stop at McDonald's and eat and do all these kind of things. I have an electric car, so you got to charge, so it takes a little bit longer. So anyway, that's kind of what we do on the show. So welcome, welcome, welcome. Happy Saturday. We cannot go 2 days without talking, you and I. So I do a Saturday show. We just do a quick tight hour. Today might be a little bit longer only because there's a lot to go over. I'm excited about a lot of the things that we have to talk about today. So we started at 10:30 this morning. We were a little bit late and I apologize for that, but better late than never, I think. But anyway, we are here. So John Lund Unleashed on YouTube, John Lund Unleashed on X at John Lund Radio on X, at John Lund Radio, Twitch, Bay Area Sports Collective, and Facebook. However you are watching, consuming the product today, thank you, thank you, thank you. Please spread the word. Tell your friends. Go to johnlundunleashed.com. And as I always say, also, if you absolutely 100% want to get your questions, comments, thoughts on the board, just hit me up with a super, and I'll make that happen and click it on the board and discuss. Good morning, good morning, good morning. And thank you, everybody, by the way, for making the time because I was a little bit late today. So good morning, good morning, good morning. East Coast Red and Gold Podcast checked in first, but that would make sense. They're on the East Coast, so it's a little bit earlier. Afternoon beers commencing. That is beautiful. You want to watch some Giants ball? What are you doing? Joe Schmo, good morning. Pine Needle, hello. What's going on? Pine Needle, what's going on? And what are you drinking for your first drink, man? Pine Needle is in Reno. Dude, I am so jealous. I really am because you got NCAA basketball going on, the Giants, you can bet some stuff. It's a good time. And from where I am, Reno's only, depending on traffic, 3 hours there. Now, it's on a Sunday, it might be five coming back, but it's only 3 hours from where I'm sitting right now. So love Reno. Big fan. Happy Saturday, Enrique. Thank you for checking in. Papa J, it's very nice to see you. Like and subscribe. Thank you, Papa J, for doing God's work on that. Much, much, much appreciated. Yeah, like we said, there's airport rules. I've decided that there's airport rules right now. Airport rules on the show. We discussed it yesterday because you guys made me pound beers. And for your pleasure, which I really didn't mind, to be honest with you. And I'm going to be totally honest with you now, and you can make fun of me. I had another one of those beers last night with my dinner as I was flipping channels watching the tournament in the A's, and it was glorious. Glorious might be a little strong, but it was really, really good. Papa J, Enrique, Pine Needle, Richard De Leon. Very nice, man. Very nice. Yeah, there you go. Like and subscribe, folks, and also on Bay Area Sports Collective and my good friends there. So make sure that you hit everybody up. It is awesome that we have some of our good, our best people in here today. Really dig it that you made the time on a Saturday. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much. Drinking a mimosa. My wife would be really proud of you, Pine. Drinking a mimosa right now, and I just hit a big jackpot. Oh, that explains it. You're the man, because I was going to save your super for a minute here, but you're here. You're in Reno. You've tuned in. Doing well so far, Johnny. I got to donate to the cause. Very well done, my friend. Very well. So you hit a jackpot. Tell me what you're doing. How did you hit the jackpot? Thank you for the donation. Again, if you want to get your stuff up on the board, make sure that you hit us up with a super. And thank you, thank you, thank you, Pine. And I like that that's orange, because it is an orange Saturday with Verlander going today, which we will discuss. So thanks to Pine Needle for sharing the jackpot with the show. That will go directly to my son, who, by the way, is in the same state as you. He's in Las Vegas. I have given him that, like I said, I gave him that Rooker plus 2,500 for the year to lead the American League in home runs. So let's see if that does. And I gave him a couple other bucks for a few things too, a few stupid bets that I laid on some sports teams, which I'll tell you at a later date. I'll tell you a later date about those. But thank you, Pine. Best of luck. By the way, that donation will give you further luck. That donation will give you further luck. So outstanding. Thank you so much for doing that. All right. I will keep the roll call coming as people come in. It is Saturday after all, and everybody's in and out of things. So excellent to see you. Thank you for making the time. Let's get to some things on this Saturday that are, it's a busy day. I mean, it's an absolute busy day. So as I put up there on the show cover, there's Steph. He's back against the Pelicans. There's Justin Verlander in the right-hand corner. He's pitching today. There's BA in the left-hand corner next to the Bay Area Sports Collective logo. Our local nightmare will be over if and when they have to write him that check, because I don't think anybody else is. That's Will Campbell running at the combine. He kind of looks like Rosie O'Donnell, but again, personal appearances are not show fodder, so I'm not going to say that. There's a reason why I have him up there, and then there's that big mock draft from Matt Miller that we're going to talk about a little bit later, and I have that thing down pick by pick, so make sure that you check that out. Before we jump into everything, remember, my good friend Dr. Jeffrey Riopelle is the fine sponsor of the program, Riopelle Cosmetic Surgery and Laser Center. And as I always tell you, all you have to do is hit us up on that QR code right there, and it'll take you straight to the Riopelle website. I'm doing, as I say, my wife's doing the stem cell. And if we were talking about the A's, Bartolo Colon did stem cell with Dr. Riopelle, and it absolutely worked. Look, he was around forever. Stem cell's no joke. And maybe you've had some of the blood done, the blood spinning. I've had that before. But my wife is doing this, as I tell you, every single day. She's doing the stem cell, and she told me the other day, unprompted, that the shoulder is about 90%. Her elbow, which is really giving her a lot of trouble, is at about 70% now. And her foot, and this has only been about 2 weeks for this one, she said her foot is completely pain-free, and she's had a problem. She goes through all sorts of different running shoes and all these different things because of her foot pain. So the stem cell is absolutely crushing it with her. If you talk to Dr. Riopelle, and again, he was one of the first in the state of California to do it, just check it out. If you got pain, you just need to give him a call. So click on that QR code. He's in San Ramon. I'm telling you, it's worth the trip. If you are not in San Ramon, absolutely worth the trip. Absolutely great guy. And then I'm doing the testosterone replacement. And there's the click on that right there, Dr. Riopelle. I'm doing the testosterone replacement with Riopelle Cosmetic Surgery and Laser Center. And I couldn't be happier. Energy. Like, I can do a show on a Saturday, no problem. Energy. Losing weight, metabolism's faster, better moods, all those kind of things that as you're kind of experiencing those as you're getting older and you're thinking to yourself, what the hell's going on? It's low T. And it's real simple. It's a quick blood test. They'll tell you exactly, oh, yeah, you have low T. They'll get you to the point. It's not like you're going to be 22 again, but they're going to get you to the point where you should be. They're not going to overdo it. He's a doctor. It's not going to be this craziness, none of that stuff, but you're going to feel great. That's all I know. I feel great. I feel like myself. I have energy. I'm going to the gym, all these different things. It's great stuff, and it's all with Dr. Riopelle. So check them out, and they do all sorts of other procedures as well. So check out Dr. Riopelle, my good friend, and Riopelle Cosmetic Surgery and Laser Center. All right, let's get to everything. Steph Curry is back. Here is Steph last night. 7-for-21 for Steph. Not his greatest game, but just to have him back on the court. Jimmy Butler had 18. We'll give you the box score in just a second, and we'll show you where the Warriors are as the Clippers and T-Wolves stay keep pace. But this is a great sight that Steph Curry is back. Here he is postgame.
Serious contusion that I'll feel it for a while, but I can play and I can't make it worse as long as I don't land on it again. Yeah, that was like a hairline fracture situation.
Yeah. How long do you expect this to? I mean, did it bother you tonight like as you're playing?
No, I didn't bother. I just aware of it, and I don't know how long it'll take. But as long as I feel like I did tonight and don't have any other incidences where I fall on it, I should be fine.
Feel general.
Felt good. I mean, a week off is great in one aspect because you're rested, but the timing, the endurance of you do your regular minutes, that was a little bit of a challenge. And, down the stretch, just trying to manage a game and not do anything crazy. So,
all right. So there's Steph Curry last night, as you can see from the numbers, 7 of 21. 5 of 16 from three. So Steph is generally better than that, but that's Steph Curry coming back from that type of an injury. And the good news is he said right there is he doesn't think it can hurt anymore. Now he's saying, unless I fall on it. And my thought is, well, you're probably going to fall on it. You're playing professional basketball. So I would imagine that probably Steph Curry is going to bang that thing up a little bit. But as he kind of pointed out there, you really don't have any choice at this particular time. He's got to play because the Warriors need him to play, and now we're down to 9 games, and there is the box. Actually, that says first quarter only. Where's the actual box itself? Do I have that? Maybe I don't. Anyway, no big deal if we don't have the box. I don't think we have the box there. That's a different kind of thing. So no big deal. 7 of 21, 5 of 16 for Steph. Jimmy Butler had 18 on the night for the Warriors as they get that win. But the thing to me, let me pop this up on your screen here. The thing is that's where they are in the standings now, and the Clippers win last night. They've got Kawhi back. Kawhi's playing great basketball in addition to what they've done, throughout the season. So that's what they've done there. Let's get this off. We don't need that. There you go. There is the famous. Yeah, that's right. The bracket. And I haven't had the bracket up for a long time. So, hey, if the Clippers want to play the Nuggets in the first round, that's great. The Warriors can make it really, really simple. If they stay in the 7 right there and don't fall to the 8, which wouldn't be great. Because then the Timberwolves would get the home court for that first game. But play the Rockets in the first round, that would be better. So I don't want them to play an extra game. And I've told you this before, the play-in scares the hell out of me, only from the standpoint of if you didn't beat the T-Wolves, then you're playing for your life. You win that 7-8 matchup, you're in the playoffs, period. Only one extra game, which you don't want to play, but still. If you lose that, then you play the winner of the 9-10, and that would be in Sacramento as of right now. Mavericks scare you a little bit because they've got Anthony Davis. If Phoenix gets in there, I've said this at nauseam, then it's, you're dealing with Kevin Durant in a one and done kind of a situation. So you don't want to be in there, even though that might be an advantageous matchup, Nuggets versus Rockets in the first round, but that's where they find themselves. And again, we zip down to the standings here for the Warriors in the Western Conference. And you can see the Rockets aren't going to be any walk in the park either. As you could look right there in the last 10, they're 9-1. So OKC and Houston are rocking and rolling. Denver, not great. The Lakers, who were hot there for a minute, are 4-6 in their last 10. We saw that. Lee played it for you yesterday. The Josh Giddey half-court shot that beat the Lakers the other night. Memphis is a complete dumpster fire. If there was a way to play Memphis in the first round, that would be outstanding, but it doesn't look like that is going to be the case. But Memphis right now in a matchup, 6-3 matchup, or excuse me, in a 5-4 matchup. So that'd be the Lakers, and the Lakers have home court advantage. Memphis is a complete mess. In fact, it would not surprise me at all if they were the 6. They could go down to the 7, I guess. They just fired their head coach with like 2 weeks left in the season. I mean, there must be a major, major problem in Memphis in that you're 2 weeks away. Last year, they were completely out of the playoffs. They had they lost a lot of John Morant. They lost everybody. They had a ton of injuries, and then they come back, and they're 44-29. Now, they've struggled, there's no doubt, but to fire your coach with 2 weeks left in the season, there must be a major problem in Memphis. So, yeah, you want to play Memphis right now? Yeah. Yes, please. As you sit there, the Warriors at 31 losses, the Lakers at 29, but the Lakers are reeling. Memphis is reeling. Could you get to 4, get to 5 in that range like that, where you could potentially play Memphis in the first round? Because that's what everybody's jockeying for. I wouldn't mind playing Memphis. The Lakers are not a great matchup. We've talked about it. The Nuggets are not a great matchup. Houston potentially is not. I know they're young, and I say that all the time that, I'd rather play a younger team, you know, Sengun is inside. They've got enough guys that are veterans, like a guy like Fred VanVleet, who, of course, beat the Warriors in a championship series. So they've got a little bit, and they're playing really good basketball. But I look at the regular season playoffs a little bit differently. But Houston, you got to give them a ton of credit. They're playing great basketball right now and would not be a great opponent, although I'd rather play the Rockets than the Nuggets. So that's the way things sit, 42 and 31 for the Warriors, the reason why they're 7, if you haven't been around. The Clippers have a 3-0 series lead. They haven't played since 2024. They're going to end the season against each other. So you've got to hope that if things are tied, then the Warriors have an opportunity to beat them. If they're one back of the Clippers going into that final game, then they can't jump the Clippers because of that season series. That won't even matter, and that'll be a meaningless game. I have a weird feeling it's going to be for that 6 spot. So anyway, that's where it sits after the Warriors beat the Pelicans, and we've talked about the schedule. It's not easy. The schedule the rest of the way, they're playing a lot of good teams. I don't think I took it off the board. We talked about it yesterday. Let me see if I can pop the schedule back up on this whole thing from yesterday. Maybe I don't have it from yesterday. Anyway, it's challenging. There's a lot of challenging games. Houston, Denver, Clippers last game of the season. They got San Antonio twice, which is obviously advantageous. They've packed things in for the season, but it's not a great situation. So that's where the Dubs are. That's where the standings are. So that's where we are on episode 101. Curry back, Dubs win. Standings I just showed you. We'll go to Verlander here in a second. But thoughts on the Dubs, what they're doing, where the standings are. I think they've got to be in the 6th. If they're in the 7 and they win that in the first game and it's not too difficult of a game, then okay, I can live with that. And then you're taking on Houston. But as I keep looking at Houston going, young team. And I'm starting to say, they're playing good basketball if you watch them. Let's see. Hey, we got a super. Hi, Brock. Brock 408. Happy Saturday to you, my friend. Teams are going at Currymore now. Absolutely, 100%. You could not be more correct, my friend, Brock 408. And the reason why is it's twofold. Well, it's actually threefold. It's let's make him play defense as much as we possibly can. And that's absolutely a playoff thing. This is why things are different. And you bring up a great point. Things in the playoff are different because you're just focused on one team for a long time. And so what they do is they start just drilling and drilling and drilling. And they're like, okay, if Steph Curry is going to kill us on offense, we're just going to put him in the action defensively as many possessions as we possibly can. And that's the big deal. Plus he's playing in his age 37 season, as great as Steph is. And he is great. And there's very little drop off in his game. 37-37, and Father Time is undefeated. Now he's kicking Father Time in the ass, and LeBron James is kicking Father Time in the ass. And there are certain players who can do it. Steph can, but that's what teams are going to do. That's going to be the strategy: is get him in the action as much as we can defensively. And then the other side of this, and you know this, Rock 408 and everybody else watching, they're just going to get physical with him in the playoffs. They always do that. So when he says, "Hey, this is fine as long as I don't fall on it," well, you're Steph Curry, and as many threes as you're going to shoot, you're going to get knocked to the floor on occasion, and you're going to hit that thing. That's just the way it's going to be. So I expect more of Steph Curry kind of falling on the floor going, yeah, but he's got to play at this point. There's 9 games left in the season. You could drop all the way to 8, and then all of a sudden, because right now Minnesota's 1 back, the Clippers are tied with you, so that means they have the 3-0 series lead. They do have the series on the Timberwolves this year. So if they're tied, then the Warriors get it. But all that means is a home game instead of a road game. Now, is that big? Yeah, sure it is. But it's still one of those situations where you just don't want to be in the play-in. I don't want to play the Timberwolves home or away, because if something weird happens now, all of a sudden you're in a one game for your life game. And it could be against a guy like Anthony Davis, who you don't defend well. It could be a guy like Kevin Durant. And neither of those teams are good. Minnesota, to me, is not even really good. But there's just 2 games, and you could lose 2 games like last week. Now, these are without Curry, I understand that, but you go into Atlanta, you should win that game, you don't. You go into Miami, that's a big game. I realize it's not a playoff game, but still, Jimmy Butler's going back to Miami. Like, that's a big deal. Everybody in the locker room's like, all right, I know how this is going to be. Now, Miami is not New York. They're not going crazy from a fan standpoint. That should make it easier for the Warriors. Everyone's laid back. They're in sandals. They're kicking it in shorts. Like, they're not freaking out and yelling. But still, you go in and Miami beats you fairly soundly the entire game, and you lose that game, and I shake my head, and I go, okay, well, if you can lose at Miami, who had lost 10 of their previous 11, you could lose to Minnesota. You could lose to the Suns. All of a sudden, the season's over. So, yeah, it's a big deal right now as far as the Warriors are concerned. I do not want to see them in playing games. And you could look at it and say, okay, well, logically, let's play with the basketball gods. I want to play the Nuggets in the first round. Totally get it. Terrible matchup. Jokic, by the way, I didn't put it up on my board today, but you see Jokic with the one-handed three-quarter shot? My God. He's like the seven-foot Curry. The guy is he's amazing. Just amazing. Anyway, they're not playing great basketball. They're 5-5 in their last 10. They're just kind of finding their way. But still, that 6-3 matchup, and the Warriors have them one more time. I'm not a big message sender when it comes to get, you got to send a message to that team. I'm not a big message sender. But that game, the last time you saw them was on your home court. No Jokic, no Murray, no Brown, and they beat you. And you got one more, and you got it on your place, too. You got to beat them, just in case you see them in the first round. And then I've always sat there and said, you know what? The 7-2 matchup, I'd rather play Houston. The way Houston's playing, that ain't going to be easy either. So it's 9 games to go. We're going to see. I can't wait to see. But it's a challenging schedule the rest of the way. They got a couple of more road games. Then you come home, and you've got some really tough games. Denver is going to be a tough game. Houston's going to be a tough game. San Antonio, those are your couple of your easy ones. But other than that, you're going down the stretch. You're playing the Clippers the final game. You got Durant and the Suns. They might be fighting for a playoff spot at that point. It's not going to be easy the rest of the way for the Warriors. And it's funny because we just got so excited about Jimmy Butler. And Jimmy Butler, man, it's like they're cruising. They're winning. And look at all these games. And all of a sudden you're sitting there going, God, the Clippers are right there. And Minnesota won't go away. What the hell, bro? So, yeah, there's a lot. This is fun. This seems like the Western Conference every single year, though, right? The Western Conference every single year feels like this. Like it's just down the stretch they come. And it's like this game, that game, all that kind of stuff. But anyway, very cool. Francis is here. Good morning. Really nice to see you. Pat H. Hello, hello, hello. As people continue to come in on a Saturday edition of the show. I chugged 2 beers yesterday, man. I can't start Saturday chugging beers. The only reason why, you should see my list right here. My list is long. And the only reason I can't chug a beer this morning is that I promised my stepson, we got to go golf a little bit. We got to go hit the ball a little bit. Because now the weather's coming around, my golf game, terrible. So I got to hit the ball. He's going to hit the ball. I got to drive. That wouldn't be good. Slugging down beers. And then CHP's like, dude, I was just listening to you in my car. You were chugging beers. And what? Anyway, that's the story as far as the Warriors are concerned. Curry's back. They win. Showed you the standings, and it's challenging. 9 games left. It is challenging because the Clippers just aren't, they're just not easing up on everything, and Kawhi's starting to hit his stride. So it's a little bit, makes you a little bit nervous on the whole thing, even if maybe you're trying to get away from the Nuggets and saying, Rockets wouldn't be terrible. Now, look, would I take the Rockets over the Nuggets in the first round? I would. But then the other side of me, devil and angel kind of a thing. I don't want to play in the play-in. Hell with it. I'd rather play the Rockets. You know what I mean? It's one of those kind of things where it's like, if you can tell me they're going to beat Minnesota in that game and have to play one extra game but they win it, then okay, I can go with that. But like I said, you lose at Miami after they lost 10 of 11, you lose at Atlanta, you lose some of these games they've lost, and you say, they're going to have playoff intensity. Are they? They are, because they've lost 3 consecutive in the play-in game. So I'm not overly confident in them going in just because it's the playoffs and they have this veteran way about them that they're just all of a sudden going to kick it up. Now, does Jimmy make a difference? Sure. I 100%. But still, I don't want to be in one and done situations. And if somehow as we sit right now, Minnesota beach in that first game, all of a sudden you're facing the potential. And I'm not, Kings fans might pop in here and go, whoa, the Kings are the 9. Like, I get it. I'm not as worried about the Kings, but look, could they go to Sacramento? Could they host Sacramento and lose to Sacramento? I mean, I think they have a matchup advantage there. But could they do that? Could they lose? Yeah, they could lose. They could lose that game. But I'm more focused on like the Mavericks just because Anthony Davis kills them, or on the Suns because Durant could easily go off for 50. And then as a Robin, you got Booker, and they're not a great team. It's just you get them for one game and it's like the tournament. The NCAA, you're watching the NCAA tournament last night, and you're like, although I will say I'm not bragging and nobody cares about my bracket. I've got all elite 8 teams left. No big deal. No big deal. All right, let's get some baseball talk. A lot of baseball talk. Justin Verlander goes to the mound today. Let me give you the Giants lineup real quick. I'm not going to make this about a pregame show or anything like that, but there is the lineup today. This is against a left-handed pitcher. Nick Lodolo is going to pitch for the Reds today, and Elliot Ramos leads off, hit the Oppo Taco in game number 1. Willie Adames Lots of strikeouts in game one. I'm not going to worry about that. He might have been pressing a little bit. Jungmoo Lee, you know, it's not impressive what he did in terms of you just look at the box score, but he got on twice via the walk, and he's not a big walk guy, which is one of the reasons he's not the leadoff hitter. Doesn't steal bases. He's not great with the walks, but he got two, and he scored both times on home runs. So that was absolutely huge for Jungmoo Lee to get on base. So, well, you look at the batting average or whatever, and the actual at-bats themselves, they were not great, but he got on twice. Matt Chapman hitting the floor. Wilmer Flores, who I won't make fun of because I was just crushing the guy. And when we did the opening day show, Bottom of the Pint with Larry Kruger, I was like, pinch hit this guy. And then, of course, he hits a home run. So well done, Wilmer Flores. He does not move great at first base. But as you can see, Ramos right-hander, Adames right-hander, Lee's a lefty, Chapman right-hander, Flores right-hander, Matos in right. That should make some people happy. Let's see what he does. Everyone's always screaming for Matos. Well, it's a left-handed pitcher out there today. So Matos will get the start in right as a right-handed hitter versus Yaz the lefty. Bailey's a switch hitter. He'll go right. Casey Schmidt's another one of those guys. If you go to my webpage at johnlundunleashed.com, I have the Giants preview up there. Just because it's one game doesn't mean it's not relevant. There's a video up there and a long story with lots of charts and fun stuff to look at. And one of the guys I talk about is Casey Schmidt, because if Schmidt can't somehow be the super two, that the super utility guy that I actually wanted Tyler Fitzgerald to be. So I wanted them late in spring training to get Alex Bregman. But given last year and those late spring training signings the last couple of years that haven't worked out, I think the guys that had the purse strings are like, there's no friggin' way we're doing that. We did that the last 2 years. Not happening. So Alex Bregman goes to the Red Sox. I would have loved Bregman. Just, he's a winner. I don't care about the cheating with the Houston. He's a winner. He's a clutch guy. Another veteran. Another guy who can be in the clubhouse that knows how to win. And I would have loved to have him at second. And Tyler Fitzgerald is like a super U that can give guys days off at second, short, third. He could even play center. So I would have liked that. But Casey Schmidt could fill that role, not playing center. But Casey Schmidt is far above average at third, short, and second. And so Casey Schmidt could play all over the diamond pretty much. And if he can, if the bat could work at all, and that's what they're doing. I mean, if you look at Casey Schmidt, actually, I'd probably DH Tyler Fitzgerald and put Casey Schmidt at second. But whatever, I'm not Bob Melvin. He knows more than me. Schmidt's a better defender than Fitzgerald at second. But I think they want to get Fitzgerald as many reps as he can at second base because that's where he's going to be playing. So I understand the thought process there. It's not short-term, it's long-term thought. But if just back to Schmidt for just a second, I wrote on my preview, and Wilmer Flores I put in there as well, I put in there guys that we're really not counting on or the Giants aren't really counting on. And if you want to have a winning season, if you want to go to the playoffs, if you want to threaten, anything like that, guys like Flores, who hit four home runs versus 23 the year before, have got to do something. Matos, a guy that's I'm almost ready to call him a 4A player if he doesn't come through this year. Matos is one of those guys that's like, who's that guy? Wilmer Flores, Matos, Schmidt. Those are the type of guys where you look at them and you say, not a lot is being expected of those guys. What can they do? So to me, I know it's game two. I'm not going to overemphasize this game two of 162. But what I will say is, and it's a big day for Casey Schmidt, just like it was a big day for Wilmer Flores, because had Flores, let's say Flores strikes out in that situation, and hang on, something in my mouth there. Let's say that Flores strikes out in that situation and they lose the game. Everybody's like, same old Flores, same old, because that's what I was thinking. Hadn't had good at bats. And they'd be looking, he's not, they're not going to give him a lot of rope. You know, the Flores struggled last year. I know he had injuries, but they're not going to give him a lot of rope. They just don't have time to do it. And I'm going to play something from Marco Luciano last night, and hopefully he can start putting some pressure on these guys. But guys have got to get off the starts. They've got to play well. The Giants can't just sit here all year and go, oh, well, the guy's just struggling, so we're just going to live with it. Like Tyler Fitzgerald, it's one game. I get it. But he looked terrible at the plate in game number one. And if that continues for a couple of weeks, Casey Schmidt might be your second baseman. These things are open. They got to look at these things. Flores is a veteran. I get it. But if you don't get off to a really good start after the year you had last year, they have to look other places. They can't sit here forever. The Giants, knowing that the Dodgers are going to run away with this thing, the Padres, now all of a sudden you're looking at, we talked about this in the preseason, where it was like, okay, in exhibition ball and spring training, now you're going up against all the teams. So if you're going up against teams in your division and they get off the slow starts, that's one thing. But the Dodgers are going to be the Dodgers. They're going to win over 100 games unless there's just massive injuries, but they've still got so much depth that it's hard to see them not playing well. So now you're up against all these other teams. You can't wait for your players to get off the slow starts and just be like, oh,
They're veterans. I got to be patient. I mean, that's Bob Melvin's MO, is to wait on veteran players and to look at how, okay, he's a veteran. I'm going to wait. You can't do that. And so, you know, Liaz, for example, there's Matos there. Tyler Fitzgerald gets off to a slow start. Schmidt is there, or other guys. You know, the rotation gets off to a slow start. Harrison is down there. There's a number of young players that are down there. Birdsong's a long guy right now. You've got to get guys in there who can pitch. And I'm not saying that ahead of like a Logan Webb or a Justin Verlander or a Robbie Ray. There are certain guys where it's like, look, he's our guy. Willie Adames. Willie Adames isn't going anywhere. I'm not suggesting that, or Matt Chapman or anything like that. I'm just simply saying that some of these guys, they'll get limited rope because they've got to get off to a good start. They've got to play well, and they got to figure out what they have around here. And there is a little bit of depth. And speaking of that, let me hit this up. This is Sacramento last night. This guy, Jeff, he does a really good job. And so a lot of times when it comes to the minors, and I'm not watching the minors, I'll grab his stuff. So a lot of ex-Giants down there. Brett Wisely, good. Carson Seymour's a name. They have like three Carsons down there. Carson Seymour, nice job. 8 strikeouts over 4. Very impressive. Tristan Beck, a name that we know. He could come back and be a long guy. But let me play this Marco Luciano home run. The only reason I do, I'm not overreacting on Marco Luciano. We're frustrated with him. We talked about him as a Giants prospect for years and years and years, and he was going to be great. And he was a shortstop. He came up. He couldn't play short. It became psychological. I don't know. He was a frying pan at shortstop. So that wasn't going to be an issue. Second base, couldn't do that. People have talked about first base. That's not an easy position. I've talked to JT Snow about it before, and JT's like, well, they're just going to throw him at first. It's not easy. And so now he's playing in the outfield after a stint at DH. And I just think 22 is too early to be a DH. I mean, what is he, 22, 23? I don't want a guy who's going to be a DH that early. Let's just see. But he's in the outfield now. But this is an impressive bit of power. And when I saw this video this morning when I was getting ready for the show, I thought to myself, Ramos, right? Elliot Ramos on a best-case scenario kind of a situation, because there was injuries. And Ramos gets off to this great start last year at SAC, and we all had our eye on him. And all of a sudden, we're looking at him. We're going, hey, this guy can play. Now, this guy's playing well. And then there was, you know, an injury. And finally, like, they had no choice. They're like, well, the guy's hot. We have an injury. We have an opportunity. And he took advantage of the opportunity. So I'm not saying this is what this is what Luciano's going to do. But certainly this is encouraging. And this is big time power. This is going oppo here. So here's Marco Luciano last night in Sacramento.
Pitch. Swing and a fly ball driven well to right. Fernandez is back. Fernandez turns and it's gone. It took Marco Luciano a while last year to get his first home run of the year. And in 2025, he gets his first on opening night. Swinging at a 3-0 pitch and blasting one out the opposite way. Three runs.
So there's a couple of things that are interesting there. And you heard, I don't know if that is that Zach Mayrudy. You heard there and you saw on the screen, he whacked down on a 3-0 pitch. Dude was like, we're just going to try to sneak a fastball by him on a 3-0 pitch. And he crushed it. Oppo power, showing you the oppo power. I don't know what he's doing defensively as far as outfield play. I don't know how good he is. That will probably keep him down. And a lot of people will be screaming for him. But here's the reality of it. He's got to defend. He can only play left field. He can't play right in this ballpark. There's no friggin' way. So he's only playing left field. So right now, Elliot Ramos is your left fielder, and he's a right-handed bat. Elliot Ramos is a right-handed bat. So it's not like you could have a situation, even if Ramos got off to a slow start, where you're platooning somebody or something like that. They could bring him up, and he could be a bit of a DH. Like, let's say Flores gets hurt, and Encarnacion is already hurt. So you may have an opportunity at DH down the line, but what I would rather do from a long-term perspective is, if he can play left field, then let's just see. Just give him reps and out in left field, which might even be more important than, let's say he gets off to just a torrid start. Now, maybe if there's an injury, you could see him taking Flores' place at DH. I understand that, but I think it's more important that he plays left field. But he can't, I don't think, play left field at a major league level right now. So that's the Giants are going to keep Luciano down probably as long as they can. But if he does what Ramos did last year, Ramos just forced his way onto the team. They had a couple of injuries. It was like, I can't remember exactly what he was hitting, but he was hitting like 330, had a bunch of bombs, and was like, you know, we had kind of forgotten about the guy. And it was like, you got to play him. He's got to play. You got to bring him up. And he did, and he played really well. So could he have that kind of a situation? Could he have that kind of an impact? The only thing I would say is, if he was a better defender and an established defender, then yeah, the moment that they had some sort of an injury and he could fill in as a DH or whatever, I don't think he's ready to play left field in the majors. But you could see him being up in the major leagues. But I think that the Giants want to play him and get him some reps in the outfield. So I think you might see if there's some injuries, which there inevitably, not if there will be, when there will be, inevitably there will be. Will he be the first guy, even if he's hitting and raking the hell out of it? I don't think so. Because I think what they'd rather do is develop him and see if he can at least play an outfield position. And that's twofold. A, for them, or B, for a trade situation where, you know, you call teams and you say, hey, I got this guy, Marco Luciano, and he's a 22-year-old DH, and teams are going, eh, don't love that. I got, you know, 35, 36-year-old DH, okay. 22-year-old DH has no defensive position? That's a tough sell. So if he can play some outfield, maybe that's with the Giants someday, or maybe that's a trade. If his bat really does play, then maybe that's a trade somewhere else. That makes sense to me. I didn't bring up Verlander a ton. I brought up a little bit about the Giants. Just Verlander, to me, and Saturday, Sunday, these two games are really important. These are really important. I realize that it's games 2 and 3, so maybe I'm overselling really important. But the rest of the staff, so Logan Webb is Logan Webb. But if Verlander and Ray are not what they showed in the spring, so Verlander's 42, coming off a neck injury, a couple of major surgeries in the last couple of years, but in spring, he looked amazing. But Father Time is undefeated, and he's 42. So I'll reserve judgment on him, and I don't care what happens in spring training, as I tell you all the time, other than injuries. Injuries are the only thing. He looked good. I saw a couple of games he pitched. He's throwing it up there 96-97. The ball's darting, and in Arizona, it normally doesn't. Guys swing and miss low in the zone. So, look, I like Justin Verlander. I hope he pitches well. I hope that the investment of $15 million, when it isn't a ton by baseball standards, is a good one for the Giants, because the way that they spend money, and they think nickels are like manhole covers. They don't throw them around a whole lot. So 15 to them is a fair amount of money. So I hope he comes through. And that would be huge for the staff, because if he today and Ray tomorrow aren't consistent, Ray's another bit of time away from Tommy John surgery at 33. So if these two guys, this is to me, the really amongst everything, and there's a lot of keys to a baseball season over 162 games. But to me, these two starts are the keys to the season. Not these two specifically, but 2 and 3 in the rotation. If these guys aren't what they showed in spring, then the hell what? Birdsong is forced into a situation, which I think he's ready. Landon Roop, who knows? Kyle Harrison, one of the young Carsons. There's like three of them, Wisenhunt, Seymour, et cetera. Like one of those guys has to come up. Now all of a sudden your rotation's in shambles. And this is one of the reasons during the offseason. And look, this is hindsight, which is always 20/20. I get it. But a guy like Jack Flaherty, who was in L.A. last night pitching against the Dodgers, I would have liked a veteran, you know, a guy that's not, you know, 38 or 40 or too young. They don't have a guy in the middle. Robbie Ray's 33. You know, go out and get a guy that you know can give you some innings. And I know Flaherty isn't the greatest, but at the end of the whole process of pitching, he was just kind of sitting out there. And I'm thinking, here's a guy from Southern California. He'd probably rather stay in California. He pitched for the Dodgers last year. They weren't going to bring him back in what they brought back. Yamamoto's healthy. They bring in Blake Snell. Otani's going to pitch at some point. They get Sasaki. So Flaherty made no sense for them. But if you go back to his St. Louis days, the guy was solid. And so I was just thinking, bring in another guy just in case. Because Verlander, you're counting on. It's not just I hope he does well. You're counting on Justin Verlander at 42. You're counting on Robbie Ray, not just off Tommy John surgery, but this time last year he was rehabbing. When did he come back? July, August? So that's a lot to ask Robbie Ray at 33 to say, hey man, give us these key innings. Because that's why it hurts with, now you're putting so much pressure on Logan Webb, you gotta go 7, because we're gonna burn our pen if Verlander can only go 5 and Ray can only go 5 and Roop can only go 5 and Hicks can, you know, Hicks last year was 5 and fly. So all of a sudden we're back to last year where Logan Webb is given a 7. He didn't on opening day, but generally speaking, Logan Webb is given a 7. 2 through 5 is given us 5. Our pen's absolutely burned. And then we're back to Logan Webb's turn in the rotation. It's like, please, Logan, please give us 7. We have to have it. That kind of a thing. So big start today. Even though it's the second game of the season, big start today for Justin Verlander. All right, Verlander, Luciano goes deep. The A's last night. I don't want everybody to leave because I'm going to bring up the A's real quick here. I'm just talking from an entertainment standpoint. I don't know what they're going to do this year. I don't. I have no idea. But this kid, Springs, pitched really well last night. They were in Seattle. Brent Rooker's a legit player. They gave him a contract extension. He had a 2-run shot after striking out in his first 5 at-bats. Lawrence Butler's a fun player to watch. Jacob Wilson, their rookie, is a rookie of the year candidate. I've been doing this so long that I did a show with his dad, Jack Wilson, in Pittsburgh. So he's from a family that knows baseball. I love those kind of guys. You know, I'm not saying he's Steph Curry, but Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, my dad played. I'm not overwhelmed by all this kind of a situation. So you got that kid. Max Muncy hits his first home run, not the Dodger. And they gave him some grief last night. So, you know, they've got some professional players on that team, unlike A's teams. That's Soderstrom, by the way. He should have led. Soderstrom had two home runs on the first night, had a couple of more hits last night. He's a really impressive player. He was taken in the same draft as Patrick Bailey, if you remember that. He came straight out of high school. He was a catcher, but now he's playing first base for the A's. The thing that, and the only reason I bring this up is, and I'm speaking for the fans here, and I could be 100% wrong, so you tell me. But what team, what a fan base wants is, if we can't win at a really high level right now, just show me the future and show me that we've got a future here. And for an A's fan, and I don't know how many stayed, and they're pissed about them leaving Oakland, and I totally get it. My son's been an A's fan his whole life, literally his whole life, and it just stays with the A's. And so he's excited because it looks like they have a future. You know, Soderstrom is a future piece, and Wilson's a future piece, and Lawrence is a future piece, and Rooker just got re-signed, and it's just kind of a fun team to watch. We're not going to spend a ton of time on them, but because the Giants didn't play last night, I was flipping channels, and I'm, you know, been getting into the baseball season. I'm like, it's like shooting into my veins, man. Like, I want to see some baseball. I just kind of got started. I understand why the Giants take the Friday off, because of, you know, if there's a weather condition, then you can make up those games. But they don't do that in Dome Stadium because they know they're just going to be able to play. So Seattle's got a roof. They can open it and close it, even though it's really weird. It's the side of it is open, so rain can come in sideways, but you can still play baseball with it. It's trippy, but it's a great stadium. But anyway, it's just a fun team to watch. Should be a pretty good bullpen than they've got, but they've got some sticks in the lineup. And you watch them and you go, there's a future. That team has a future. Now, I don't know where they're going to be, where they're going to play. I'm not into that political side of things, whether they're ever going to make it to Vegas or Sacramento, or I don't even care about any of that. Now, I would if I was a hardcore A's fan, and I have a lot of respect for A's fans. I'm just saying the product on the field, and this is where I would look at the Giants and say, you know, Eldridge, it's huge that ultimately Eldridge comes through and some of these young pitchers. And because as a fan, this is how I look at it. As a fan of sports myself, if my team's not at the top, the worst place for my team to be is in the middle and with no prospects, you know? So it's just like, we got this old team and I know that we have to hit the reset button at some point. And we haven't done that yet. So you hit this low point, and then when you start bouncing back, all of a sudden you start getting excited about your team. Like, man, this team's got potential to do something. And that's where I think it's exciting. So anyway, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on them. I know that, you know, like I said, I was here right when 95.7 the game started, and Greg and I, Papa and I, were doing middays, and we hated it when A's games were on because the ratings were terrible. They were terrible on the radio. So our ratings were one thing, and then the A's would come on and bomb our ratings down, and then it would be time to get a bonus, and they'd be like, man, if it wasn't for those 8 A's games that played during your show this, you know, over this ratings period, you guys would have been here, but you're here and you get no bonus. And you're like, thanks, A's. So I'm not anti-A's, and I know a lot of people within the organization, and I was happy to see on NBC Sports California that Towney was doing it with one of my favorite people. I was watching the post game last night a little bit, and Shooty Babbitt was on it with Townsend, and I was like, Shooty's an awesome guy. Just a great guy. So, you know, it's a fun team. It's an exciting team. That's all. That's all I'll say. All right, let's get to the Miller mock, because this is what people have been waiting for, the Miller mock, and I did this morning. With everything. Let me, before I go off baseball, let me just make sure that everybody is here and saying hello. Lundy, good morning, my friend. Nice to see you. That is by God, that is a sweet mullet. Look at that. Look at that. Kid Juan Miguel. I don't know where you got that picture, dude. That's outstanding. Hey, Skills. Did I see? Good morning to Skills. If I remember correctly, Anthony, they got someone to run at first base. I think you did. I think you're right about that. Good morning, Anthony. Good morning to you. If I've not said hello to you. Who else do we have? Anybody else new? I already said, JP from the 510 did not say hello to you this morning. Good morning. Happy Saturday to you. And if anybody else I missed, I say hi to Pat H. AJ Cruz. Good to see you, my friend. Very nice. Christopher. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning, everybody. Sorry I was late. Like I said, yeah, I could chug beers later. I could absolutely chug beers later. It's just, I got to drive. The weather's getting decent. I have to go to Home Depot, one of my least favorite places to go. Like, I got this list that I wrote before the show. Ridiculous. Just ridiculous. All this stuff I got to do today. So, yeah. If I wasn't so busy, I believe me, I'd just sit here and chug beers. I didn't have as much going on yesterday, so I'm feeling fine. All right, let's move on to some Miller mock. Miller mock. In fact, you know, let me do this real quick. 48 hours on BA, and then I'll do Miller mock because I don't really want to talk about Brandon Ayuk anymore. And since this is my show, even though I try to be as democratic as possible, if I was on KNBR still, I would probably be like, oh, BA, blah, blah, blah. There's no new news. Today's the 29th. So what are we at? 29th, 30th tomorrow, 31st, Tuesday, they owe that check. So if nothing happens by Tuesday, then he's going to be a Niner. I fully expect him to be. It's not only the $22.8 million that the team would have to pay. It's not only the $25-plus million that they have to pay in salary for an injured guy. We're so close to the draft from a timing standpoint. What happens is all these teams get into their draft mode, and then they start getting excited. They start looking at players that could be available in the second, third, fourth, fifth round as far as receivers, and they go to themselves, we're going to have an influx of talent at the receiver position. Why, again, would I go out and do this? Like, it doesn't make sense anyway for a team to, but I could see it if they had an injury in training camp. I could see it if they had a situation come up wherever, you know, different times of the year. But right now, it's like they're going to bring in 8 or 10 new players, depending on how many picks they have, 6, 7, 8, 10 players, whatever it is. And they're thinking to themselves, well, in the Niners' case, 11 maybe, as many as 11. And you look at your – and you go, why would I do that? Like, I love this kid, you know, in the third round, this wide receiver or whatever. I think he can be really good. So the timing – all of those factors, to me, make it highly unlikely. And I've said this for a long time, and then all of a sudden I see it from Adam Schefter yesterday, and they just laugh because I'm like, where's Schefter been? Like, this is not new news. But then he brings it out and everybody rewrites the whole story again yesterday. Like, oh, but Adam Schefter said. It's like, Adam Schefter said. Just look at logic. Like, I think I even have it. Yeah. And nobody wants to take on that contract when the guy is going to be healthy again. And when I understand, I would think he's ready to play by midseason. Might be a team out there that is willing to basically not give up very much to get a great player coming off the injury. Yeah, okay. I don't know who would be willing to give it up. If they gave up absolutely nothing and Jed just hated the contract that much, that's the only way. So anyway, I wanted to briefly mention that, but you know what? Let's hit the Miller mock draft, because in that way, I don't have to go to BA. I can just do Miller mock draft. So I brought up this yesterday, and I had just saw this right before the show started. 2025 NFL mock draft, Matt Miller's predictions for 257 picks. And what Matt Miller has essentially become is he took Todd McShay's place. And I think it's because Todd McShay put on way too much of that orange glow on his face. And it was just messing up the cameras for ESPN. Like, when he would be on my TV, it would look like he was neon orange. And I think now that he's with the Ringer, but I think he's only doing the draft coverage through that. And I think he's done with the Ringer too, but he's toned that down. But man, I'm just looking at this whole thing going, oh my God, that's orange. So maybe that's why, because his knowledge was really good. But anyway, Matt Miller is really, really good at what he does. So I told you yesterday on the show, I said, what we'll do tomorrow, which is today, is that we would look at Matt Miller's 7-round mock draft, and we would make it kind of a Niners mock draft and take a look at it. So here's what he's got. 11th overall pick, the 49ers in the first round of the 2025 NFL draft select, according to Matt Miller. Will Johnson, cornerback, Michigan. Here's what he says. What do you get for a team that likes 9 starters this offseason? The best player on the board. Seamless replacement for Charius Ward. Toe injury, blah, blah, blah. Now, here's what I would say to that. They need so much, and you've got to marry whatever teams say. I talk about lying season all the time. Whatever teams say, yeah, we don't worry about, we just take the best player. Teams don't take the best player, because if they did, they would have depth at a bunch of different positions. They're marrying the combination of biggest need to best player is what they're doing. So if you have a massive need, you're going to probably take, unless that player is like a second round grade, but if it's close, let's say Will Johnson is close to, I don't know, Kenneth Grant, the defensive tackle, or Will Campbell, the offensive tackle, or whatever the case may be, they're going to take that need over the best player. And right, wrong, or indifferent, that's just the way it goes. You're not going to, let's say the best player on their board at 11 is Austin Jeanty, the running back from Boise State. They're not going to take him because they've got Christian McCaffrey. So you're marrying need with the best player available. That's just what you do. And so when anybody says best, we were just saying best player, point at me, you know, point blank, they're not. Because you'll look at teams where they all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, they took a need. Oh my God, they took a need. Oh my God, they took a need. Like, Cam Ward is not the best player in this draft from Miami. And I remember watching a ton at Washington State, never thought he was going to be a first round pick. But the Titans need a quarterback badly. Cleveland needs a quarterback badly. Giants need a quarterback badly. The reason why these teams failed in 2021 is because they overvalued the position. Zach Wilson and Trey Lance and Justin Fields and Mac Jones were not the best players at that slot, but they just picked them because quarterbacks are so valuable. And that goes throughout the entire process. If a team has got a screaming need somewhere, they're going to take that player. They're going to take need at that position. That's just what teams do. So what Matt Miller is suggesting is that they take Will Johnson, cornerback out of Michigan. He's a nice player. In fact, I saw him early in this process be like a top 5 or 6 player. It's not that I don't like him. He's got good size. He is coming off an injury. But as I look at the 49ers' needs, yeah, Ward from 2023 is a big loss. Ward from 2024 isn't. And it was off-the-field stuff. I'm not saying that the guy's not a good player. He's going to go to the Colts, and he's going to play well. But they spent a second-round pick on Renardo Green last year. And one of the things that the 49ers have to start doing, and I believe they are doing, is saying, look, we took a guy somewhere. That guy's got to play. So to me, I know they need a third corner. They do. And I don't, you know, the Trey Brown from Seattle gets injured a lot. He's kind of an insurance guy. So I guess right now, Trey Brown would be the third corner. They'd move Deebo inside to the slot, and they would go Renardo Green, Trey Brown on the outside, and then they would have Deebo Lenore as the nickel in passing situations, which every down is a passing situation, but they would start Green and Lenore, and I have no problem with that. He was a second-round pick. He played fairly well last year. You got to see if the guy can play. So to me, corner is so far down the line in terms of what they need. Like, I wouldn't mind if they went for one in the third or the fourth round, which there's not a ton of depth at the corner position, so I get it. It's not that it's a horrible pick. It's not. It's just that I need an offensive tackle. I need a defensive tackle. I have so many needs that if somebody slips in the draft, so that's what he got in the first round. If somebody slips, though, in the first round, Membu, the kid out of Missouri, who he has going 7th overall to the Jets. But here's the bigger issue I have with that pick is he has Will Campbell, the offensive tackle out of LSU, going 13th to the Dolphins or two picks later. And to me, he can play guard. He can play tackle. Now, does he look a little bit like a younger Rosie O'Donnell in a league of their own? He does, but that's not going to keep me from taking him 11th. The weirdest thing, and I talked about this a little bit yesterday, his arm length discussion is BS after it was remeasured at 33 inches. I think it was like 32 5/8 or something. So 33 inches, all of a sudden his arms grew, which is crazy. I've seen hand size be different, 40s be different, all these different things. I've never seen arm length extend and change, but it depends on what the 49ers think of the guy. If he's sitting there and the arm length is a big issue for the 49ers, then yeah, they're not going to take him. But in my world of mock drafts, if he's on the board and they're picking at 11 and you don't want to be picking that high very often, I would pick Will Campbell and I'd stick Campbell at right tackle. I'd put Colt McKivitt to left guard. My offensive line is fixed. And then when Trent Williams retires, and I think it's going to be after this year, then hopefully you can move Will Campbell to left tackle. He's one of those guys that to me has been overly scrutinized. He was a top five pick through this whole process. And then the combine comes and his arms are 0.3 inches too short for the position. All of a sudden he can't play the position. And now they're, no, wait a minute. They are 33 inches long and all this kind of stuff, whatever. Worst case scenario for Will Campbell is he's a really good guard. So I want him to be a tackle, and then I want him to take over for Trent Williams. But when you're taking guys in the draft to give yourself some floor or some insurance to say that this guy can be at worst a really good, maybe a Pro Bowl, all pro guard. Okay. All of a sudden I've got Pooney and Campbell as my guards, and I got tackles more important to me. I get it. But I say this again and again and again, Brock Purdy's barely 6'1" and he can't see a lot of times over the line. You've got to get him. There cannot be middle pressure for him. Now, outside pressure sucks too, but the quickest way to the quarterback's right up the middle. And the Niners gave up way too much middle pressure last year. Aaron Banks sucked at it. He gave up 25 pressures. Brendel's not a bad run center. He was 12th best in as far as the run, but constantly, time and time again, he's on his back looking up at Brock Purdy getting pressure or sacked. Can't have it. So I don't know if they can address all those things, but just for the first pick, I like Will Johnson. I get the whole theory of best player available, but a lot of times you're looking at this thing going, man, they need trenches so badly. And I know they have a lot of picks, but if you're up at 11 and you don't think you're going to be at 11 a lot, which is what the 49ers probably think, then I got to take Will Campbell over a corner. That's just me. Give me your thoughts. Round two for Matt Miller. I love this pick, but I just don't think he's going to be there. Walter Nolan, who I would consider it the 11th overall pick, super quick, really disruptive. He's about 6'2", 290. I love him. Now, he's not the run stuffer that you need, although he did have good run grades. He's more of a, just a quick up the field type of a guy who can get to the quarterback. I really like this. Maybe what Javon Hargrave was supposed to be is kind of what he is. So as he points out here, when dialed in, which you hate to hear that because it means he's not motivated, but with Chris Kocurek, I think that helps a lot. He can be a difference maker at the three technique with a fantastic first step. Proven productions, 14 tackles for loss, 6.5 sacks last year. Yes, please. I love that pick. Absolutely. If they could get him in the second round, I don't know why he's falling. Maybe it's size. Maybe it's attitude. I have heard some attitude things with him. Whatever. Keep spreading those rumors if you're the 49ers. That would be an amazing pick in the second round, Walter Nolan, because a lot of early mock drafts had him going in the first round, 11th of the 49ers. He got the 43. Some team would take it before then. They trade up, something like that. I don't think he'll make it to 43. Could be wrong. Third round pick, I don't mind, but he only did this because he didn't take a tackle in the first round, which is, like I said, I think there's opportunity. So I would flip that. I would take the elite offensive tackle in the first round in Will Campbell. I might go corner here. He went to corner in the first round, whatever the case may be. This kid's a 6'8 guy. He's really big. He is athletic, but here's what I hate too. Developmental upside. Now he's 6'8", 331. He's absolutely massive. So he's a right tackle type. I don't know that he can move over to left tackle in the NFL, but I don't like developmental type. I just, that it's like, oh my God. So can you put him at right tackle next year? Because my thought is if you get a tackle this year, he's going to play right tackle. You're going to move him to Kibitz to left guard to take over for Banks, who a lot of people within the organization like him at guard. And then next year, you want a year away, and then he's going to play left tackle for Trent Williams. If he's a developmental type, I don't even know if he can play this year. And at 6'8", he cannot be a guard. He's too big for that position to be inside to get his pad level down. So all of a sudden, you're looking at a guy who's 6'8", who's a developmental type by Matt Miller's own assessment, and he's a tackle only. And he's probably a right tackle only. I could be wrong. And he's got great athleticism, so maybe he's a left tackle too. But he can't go inside. Like Will Campbell can't play outside and go inside and be a Pro Bowl guard. This guy's a 6'8 flyer is what you're doing in the third round, and that's just, nah. 75th overall pick, I got to have something better. I got to have something more solid. Now, this guy comes up maybe in the fourth round, okay. But the only reason he goes to this tackle in the third round is because he didn't take one in the first round, and I would flip that myself personally. Fourth round, now this is interesting. I don't mind this. Now he went tackle twice. So he goes tackle, third round, tackle, fourth round, 75th pick and 100th pick. Blah, 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 blah. Adding Williams at right tackle in round three as a value and a scheme fit thanks to his power in the run game. So what he's saying is that Williams would be the right tackle long-term and this kid from Minnesota, Ursary, would be the left tackle long-term is what he's thinking. Because here's the other thing too. Colton McKivitz is a free agent after this year. I'm sorry to tell you though, they like Colton McKivitz. They do. They like Colton McKivitz. So I'm just letting you know. Don't kill the messenger. They like Colton McKivitz. Just telling you. All right. Now this part gets to be interesting to me. All right. Because the red is what obviously what Matt Miller says here at pick 113. Savion Jones, edge LSU. It's not that I don't like him. He's a nice player. But what I do like is a lot of players that were picked around him. So I know Larry Kruger doesn't like this guy, Deion Walker out of Kentucky. He wasn't great last year, but the year before he was absolutely dominant and he's 6'6" and he's like 350 pounds, but he can move. He's a dancing bear. Now, maybe he sucks. I don't know, but I need more defensive linemen. So in the second round, he had them taking Walter Nolan, which I love, but Nolan next to Walker, Nolan's the quick guy. Walker's the big guy. That's kind of what you want inside, one penetrator, one guy who's going to stuff run. That's what Walker is. Norman Lott's kind of a combination, but I would go two defensive tackles in my first four rounds. There's no question about it. Harold Fannin Jr., if you don't know, caught like 110, 118, whatever it was. He could be that second receiving tight end because they signed Luke Farrell, but Farrell's a blocker only. Farrell caught 12 passes last year, 17 targets, targeted once in the red zone. He's never caught a touchdown in the league, and he's 27. So he's a third tight end blocking type. Harold Fannin Jr. is only a receiver. He's not a great blocker. He's about 6'4", 230, a little bit undersized. I think you can teach blocking, but the guy is special as far as catching the football. So I wouldn't mind that, even though I like Savion Jones. And then the other one is, I know maybe you don't like Chris Paul, the basketball player, but Chris Paul Jr., the linebacker, is good, and they need someone to replace our good friend 57, Dre Greenlaw, and so far in free agency, and they might be able to do this. Michael Kendricks is still out there. I don't know what the health level of C.J. Mosley is, who played linebacker under Robert Saleh with the Jets. I don't know if he's rehabbing or what the deal is. 2 years ago, he was really good. Last year, he had major injuries, but I think that's a big need. A lot of people have talked about Cam Scatabo. I like Cam. My kid goes to Arizona State, knows him. Great kid, big Niners fan. I understand that. Catches the football out of the backfield, was a tremendous college player. He just ran a 4.65 at their pro day. Not great. I like him. Everybody thinks because he looks big, he's listed at 5'11", 215, that he could be a fullback. He's not a fullback. He's not a blocker. He's a nice player. I really like him, and he's probably going to be better than what his numbers are as far as his, you know, his type of things. You know, he's going to outplay, I think, his numbers, 4.65, but I wouldn't take him. But you look at Pittsburgh, Cam Scatabo is a perfect player for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Jaden Blue, the guy behind him, I didn't mark him either because I think it's too early to take a running back, but he is super fast. The Niners have had much better luck in late rounds and free agency than they did. So, I mean, we're talking pick 113 here. So I wouldn't take Jaden Blue too early, but he's really fast out of Texas. And then I don't even mind Mitchell Evans, 125, who they have going to the Chargers. He's more of a complete tight end than what Fannin is, who I have marked, and he's going to the Bengals in this mock. Mitchell Evans is nice. He's big. He's not as good of a receiver, but a better blocker than what Fannin is. So maybe he fits that mold of the 49ers better than what Fannin is. Fannin is much more of a receiver. But Evans is a nice tight end. So my point is that it's not that I don't think Savion Jones is a decent player and they do need edge help. There's a bunch of guys that in this mock that are quality football players that are behind him that I probably would rather have. Could be wrong there. Also, Jake Majors, I didn't mention him out of Denver. He's okay. I want them to find a power center. The kid Wilson out of Georgia I really like, but he only started 1 year at Georgia. That makes me a little bit nervous. So anyway, there's his fourth round as we go through the Matt Miller. Let me just pop this back up. The Matt Miller mock draft, 7-round mock draft. So we just got done with this one, I think. Did we just do that? Yeah, we just did that in the fourth. Here's the fifth round. The Niners have a ton of fifth round picks. So at the top there, you see RJ Harvey, running back, Central Florida. He's a one cut and go guy. He would fit the system. I understand that. There's the kid from Miami who supposedly ran a 5.40. I don't believe. The reason I have Jared Ivey there is I like him out of Ole Miss. And if you don't take the edge rusher last round, which I just talked about, it's that kind of a thing. So they took an edge rusher, Savion Jones, and then all those other guys are there. If you don't take the edge rusher there and you take somebody else that I highlighted, then you can take Ivey there. And again, this is a mock draft, so who the hell knows who's going to be around. I don't think they're going to take a quarterback at 143 as a backup. They already have Mac Jones, but I would not mind if they took one of these guys in the mid rounds and they later on they do, or Matt Miller has them taking one. They need a safety. I'm not a huge Moore fan of Alabama, but they do need another safety, some depth there. Howard's a nice player. I doubt they would take him that early. This is where it gets fun. These next two picks I really like. So this is the seventh round. We're getting into the seventh round here. Look at the top there. Riley Leonard, quarterback, Notre Dame. He's a really good athlete. If you watch Notre Dame this year, and who the hell didn't because he got to the national title game, Leonard went to Duke. He got off to a bit of a slow start at Notre Dame. Super smart kid. I think they, in Kyle's system, he would be good because he's got the athleticism, kind of like Brock, even a little bit better as far as his athleticism is concerned, but he's a thinking man's quarterback. He could go through the progressions. I don't mind that, and especially we're talking late, so now you have Mac Jones and Riley Leonard. I would not mind that pick at all. But there at the bottom, if you watch the Krug Show with any regularity, Willie Lampkin, he's a guard. He would play center in the NFL because he doesn't have the reach to even play guard. But he's 5'10 and like 290 pounds. So he's vastly undersized at 5'10, 290. Like you look him in the huddle and go, who let that guy on the field? But he's got great numbers. He played at North Carolina last year, but he played, I think it was like North Carolina A&T or whatever, played at a different school, but then he played at North Carolina the last couple of years. And the guy's a monster. He's a mauler. He's a former wrestler. He's at the college level. He's really good. He might be too undersized to play in the NFL, but people love him. And he was good at the Senior Bowl, and he's 5'10", like 290. And so he's a center only. So I don't know if that's what they would do. I don't know if he'd get overpowered. I get nervous about that. You're talking about big defensive tackles. Think about like the Eagles inside with like a Jalen, you're in a playoff game and Willie Lampkin's your center and Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis are inside against this guy. Just, it just, logic tells me he's going to get overpowered. So I don't know. So anyway, what did you think? There you go. I went through the 7-round mock draft with you. Didn't love the first pick. Like I said, corner Will Johnson. I like Will Johnson. I just think he's got Will Campbell on the board. I would have went there. Walter Nolan's a great pick in the second round. I don't think he's going to be there, but that would be amazing if he were. Don't mind this pick if they don't go tackle in the first round, but I think they will. And the fact that he's talked about developmental upside means he's not ready yet. And they need guys that are ready like yesterday. Then he takes another tackle, which I don't have a problem with because you're going to the trenches. I get it. And like I said, Savion Jones, they need an edge rusher, but look at all that talent that's still on the board there. And then you go here, you could take the edge rusher there. He's got a running back. I still think that's too early at 138 for a running back. You've got the top two. That would be your third string running back right there that you're spending pick 138 on, because McCaffrey supposedly is healthier. They wouldn't have traded Mason. Garendo is going to be the number two back. And then, so you're talking about with a team that has as many needs as the 49ers have, that you're going to take a running back at pick 138. I just don't think that that's the value. I think with this, with the depth of running back at in this year's draft, I think you'd go in this round, because they have a pick even after this, by the way, the Niners do. They have another, they have 3 7-round picks. So even, let's say they went Leonard, Lampkin, and a running back. I think that's the time you take the running back if you're the 49ers, so you keep them off the free agent market, because they've done well late rounders and free agents as far as running backs. Think about it. Matt Breida, they brought in him early in there. In fact, I think in their first year. And then they brought in, you know, late in this, in the whole process, they've gotten guys. So it's just stay away from the third round, right? Ty Davis Price in the third round, Trey Sermon in the third round. You don't want that. But Elijah Mitchell was a 6th-round pick, brought in as a free agent. So, they brought in Matt as a free agent. So, you know, they've done well with running backs either late or in free agency, Matt Breida. So I don't know that they would go at 138 there. So give me your thoughts on that. You love it, you hate it. That's one man's opinion. They'll probably take none of those players now that a mock draft is out saying that they are going to take those players. What these mock drafts are a lot of times too is it's where a player should go. So these guys should go there. Then they look over at the Niners and they say, what are their needs? Oh, this is a match. You know, and the other thing that's that you don't know about mock drafts is, and we've learned this about John and Kyle, the reason why they're off is not where a player goes, but that, because that's what they're doing. They're looking at the range going, well, this is the range of this player who needs possibly that position that we haven't addressed yet. That's kind of how they do the mock. But they don't know who likes who. They don't know exactly what they're looking for. Like when early in the process, I remember Papa pounding the table for Jerry Jeudy, and it was like Jerry Jeudy from a physical standpoint, because he was so thin. From an attitude standpoint, they probably didn't like. They weren't ever going to take a Jerry Jeudy. Now, they like a Brandon Ayuk, was a tougher kind of a guy, that kind of stuff, bulkier kind of a guy. They knew he was going to block, so he fit what the 49ers were looking for. So you got to understand what each team's goals are. You may have someone higher up, you know, the Mel Kuypers and all these mockers might have a guy higher up. That's their general consensus, but a team is going to have a different looking board based on not only what their needs are, but they've talked to these guys. Who's a Niner? Who's a guy that loves football? Who's a, you know, all these different things that they find to be valuable on and off the field. They've got them ranked differently. And so now you're going, well, Mel Kiper had that. That's the next guy. Why did they take that guy? Because it's just, it's a culture fit. A lot of times it's a culture fit just as much as it is on the field. Does he love football? Is he just living for it? Is he, you know, did we get a good vibe from that guy? What you might think is like Mel has him here. Matt Miller has him there. You know, moving the sticks has them there. Like, why aren't they taking that guy? So, anyway, it's a massive draft for the 49ers, given the whole situation here. One thing, and I already did 48 on BA. So before I got one more thing for you, and I don't have it on the board here, but it's something that we talk about on the show all the time. And I'm not going to say it's reared its ugly head, but it's really interesting to me. So I'm going to do that before we get out of here. But I just did the whole mock thing without basically taking a breath. And I didn't get your thoughts on it. So what do you think? Let me get your thoughts on all that kind of stuff. Tacky, I'm on my 4th drink and maybe. Oh, I know the last part of what you said. I know that. Let's see. If Larry had his way, Willie Lampkin would switch to emergency quarterback and the Niners would tush push all the way to the Super Bowl. I gotta screenshot that and show him that. Absolutely. My God. I don't know that he's pushed for a guy or had a crush on a guy more than this is. This is porn for Larry. There's no doubt. I mean, he could. Sometimes we'll be doing a show, like on, we do shows on Mondays or whenever we do shows. When's the last time we did a show with Larry? Thursday, Wednesday. I can't remember. But we'll be doing a show, and we won't even be talking about the draft. But well, like the show on opening day for the Giants when we did Bottom of the Pint. It's like all of a sudden he went into draft mode. I'm like, oh, man, how are we going to get out of this? Like, we're doing a Giants show. Like, how the hell are we going to get out of this draft talk? We did eventually, but, you know, it's just what you love. I mean, like, what you're into and what you love. And I totally get it, man. Totally love it. Let me see what else do we got. Oh, hello, Kenny Niners. Good to see you, man. Kenny 49ers. Very nice to see you. That is nice. I like that. On the Saturday edition of the show, what else do we got? All right. Let's see what else. You go into a little radio talk here. Very nice. Very nice. What else do we have? Anything else? Oh, lots of radio talk. A little Murph talk here. Does Murph still go on with Paulie every Monday? I was told by a birdie that they said that we couldn't be have any of those guys on. So let's see. We need more D-line than O-line, so D-line first. The one thing I would say about that East Coast, my friend, is that this is a really deep draft for D-line. So if they are somebody that they absolutely love at 11, you know, if maybe they love Grant, for example, because he's just so different and he can stop the run. And maybe they think he's a freak at 340 pounds and can move and do all these different things because he's really different. Like Walter Nolan is quick, but you can find those guys at like 6'2", 290. There's a number of those guys in this draft. But the real guy who's different, Mason Graham is different too. I don't know that he's going to get, you know, be an 8 or a 10 sack guy. He might be a 6 sack guy, but he can really help against the run and be an anchor inside. So if he were to somehow slip to 11, I think they would consider that. The two Michigan guys. I think whatever you think of Mason Graham, if he were to slip, I think he might be a guy that they would make an exception for because he is on that next level to the rest of these guys. And then Grant, the Grant kid, because he's 340 pounds and some people think that he is absolutely great. And if you think that he can stop your run issues and maybe even give you a push in the middle against the, because I don't just want to run stuffer at 11. You can get those guys. I don't want to do that now, but if they think Grant can be a guy that is going to stuff the run and he could give him like 6 sacks in the middle and he can help out Bosa from the middle and push the pocket in the middle so that quarterback has to move up in the pocket and boom, there's Bosa. Then I could see them taking him at 11 if they're that much into him. But the defensive line depth is one of the strongest, if not the strongest position as far as overall depth in the draft. And I've said this again and again. Daniel Jeremiah says that there are 24 starting defensive linemen in this draft. So you might be able to wait, and that's why they have Nolan in the second round. I don't think Nolan's getting to the second round, but it could be 100% wrong. What do I know? So that's kind of the thought there is they may not go 11 unless Mason Graham drops or they think Grant is all that, and I haven't heard. I don't know that. I'll talk to some more people before the draft, but I don't know that they love him to that extent. If they do, he's different than the rest of the defensive tackles. He's unique, and I could see them taking him there. Other than that, I think, like I said, in this mock draft, I'm only doing it based on this mock draft of Matt Miller, and he did the 7 rounds. He's got Will Campbell on the board still. And to me, it's like, nah, man, this guy, you gotta take that guy. So there you go. All right, let me do this. This is one thing that I had, and I didn't know when I was going to throw this in. I was either going to do it at the beginning or the end, but I'm going to do it at the end. And the only reason I am is because it's an NBA-ish story. But the only reason I'm doing this is because we talk about this all the time, and I just want to, and I worked for Mark Cuban years and years and years ago. And what's funny about this is a former employee taking a shot at him, and then Cuban just goes nuclear on the guy. And I can just tell you before I pop this up on the screen that when it came to money or needs or whatever, when Cuban owned the Mavericks, it was like, you could get whatever you needed, not what you wanted, but you could get whatever you needed. And he had this downtown warehouse where the administration of the Mavericks were. And it wasn't, I'm not saying it was, you know, not fancy, but it wasn't overly fancy either. And you walk in and he didn't have any doors. Like it was just all like almost like a cube farm, but there was one place where it was glassed in and you could have a meeting if you needed a meeting. And then his desk was actually in the middle of it. It was wild. And it had like these cement floors. It was nothing overly fancy. So that's where Mark Cuban was based. And he was very generous, to say the least. And so I tell you, the reason I bring this up is I tell you all the time, not all owners want to win. They want to make money. They have a business and they look at this business, and I've told you this too, that they've told me straight to my face, more than one owner. This is one of my 50 or 100 or 200 businesses. I treat it like that. Other owners are like, oh my God, I got to win. Joe Lacob, I got to win. Mark Cuban, I got to win. Jed York, I think, is going through something, but he, one of the things, Mike Silva wrote this maybe a month or two ago. It was a great piece, but the only thing I had an exception with was Jed York wants to win. This is not about Jed York not wanting to win to doing this reset. He wants to just change things around, but he wants to win. There are certain owners, and I'm putting the Giants in this, that I think want to turn turnstiles and sell garlic fries. And they know the ballpark is the king. When they got that influx of money from selling 10% of their team, which I don't even know if it's in their bank account yet. It's like $500 million. They didn't say, Larry Bear did not say publicly, we're going to put this back into baseball operations. I'm not saying they should sign a player with the money. What I'm saying is put it back into baseball operations, at least some of it. It's not what he said. He said, we're going to make the Willie Mays Plaza better. We're going to make these suites better. So they're just like, let's make money. That's fine. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. You own the team. Do whatever you want. I think you have a civic duty to find a happy medium there. I think you have a civic duty to say, look, we just got $500 million on basically, it's a loan on the house, right? Like we all take these loans out on the value of our house and say, all right, I need to fix this, fix that. You know, we're going to put in a pool. We're going to do that, whatever. A home equity loan. It's a home equity loan. You know, you just took 10% of the value of the franchise. Everybody always goes, well, if you want to get out of it, sell the team. Well, they can do both. They can sell 10% of the team, use that equity to do whatever they want. It's a home equity loan. It's a team equity loan in this case. So what are they going to do? They're going to upgrade the house. They're not upgrading baseball operations, which I think they should. So, and that's what a lot of teams would do if they had owners who were just dying to win. I'll take that money and we'll put it into baseball operations. They're not going to do that. He's said publicly, Larry Bear, they're going to the front of Willie Mays Plaza. That's not going to make any difference in baseball, but okay. It's going to maybe bring some more people in. I doubt it, but okay. They're going to update that. Talked about luxuries and suites and, you know, you're going to pay more money for that. Okay. More income, more, you know. Now I'd like to say that because they're going to invest into the park and maybe the park will make more money for them, then they'll invest that back into the team. Remember, the note for the stadium's paid off. But they're not going to, that's not the way that it's being indicated to anybody that, hey, we're going to get more money. So therefore, they're two separate things. Payroll is separate from what the income is. This is what they set it at. So it doesn't mean if they're getting more money in that they'll expand the payroll. A lot of teams do that. Teams who want to win do that. They don't seem to do that. So, okay, there's the backdrop of everything. Not every owner wants to win, even though you're like, oh, he's the owner. He wants to win. And I've said that time and time again. So then what happens here is essentially, I'm going to try to make this, can I make that any bigger? Well, I'm going to have to explain this to you. So what it says is a former Mavs employee posted on Facebook that Mark Cuban should be run out of Dallas. And then Mark Cuban goes off on the guy. And essentially what Cuban does here is, so the guy worked for the Mavericks. And when Cuban sold the team, he gave out major bonuses to a lot of the employees, including this guy. So this guy gets a big bonus and says basically for, he must have been drunk when he said it, but basically for selling the team, who then the new owners traded Luka, Cuban should be run out of town. Cuban sees it, goes off on the guy. And essentially what he said was in this paragraph was, I spent a ton of money on the Mavericks. And the reason I sold the Mavericks is because he didn't want his kids to have to deal with the fans and the expectations and people like this guy and nothing's good enough. And it's just, and it became really difficult for him to own the team because it was just constantly on blast. Like he was just constantly on blast in the public. And he's like, look, I got more money than God. I don't have to put up with this crap. So he sold the team. He kept a quarter of the team, but he, you know, as far as the, we're going to trade Luka, he had no say in it. And so this guy's blasting Cuban for the whole Luka thing. And basically in a roundabout way, called him cheap. And in this retort that Cuban had to this guy, he said, I made money in two of the 23 seasons I owned the Mavericks. He goes, I lost hundreds of millions of dollars. I made money in two of the 23 seasons owning the Dallas Mavericks. So I can take that off the screen now because I'm just explaining it to you. But there's the whole thing. And you can look up if you want. Cuban should be run out of Dallas. He did not hold back in his comments. Mark Cuban wanted to win. I know that because I worked for the guy. I know that because when the We Believe Warriors beat the Mavericks, and I was the program director of ESPN 103.3 FM in Dallas, the flagship of the Dallas Mavericks, that Mark Cuban went screaming. All of a sudden, I was like, was that Mark Cuban? Mark Cuban goes screaming past my office straight into the radio studio where a guy named Randy Galloway, who was a legend in media in Dallas. He was a writer for many, many years. And then he had a radio show on ESPN 103.3 in Dallas called Galloway and Company. And all of a sudden, it was like he went screaming past. And he later told me that he lands his plane he didn't land his plane. He's in his private plane. He gets off the plane, gets in his car, and it happened to be on the Mavericks flagship, which was our station. And Galloway is blasting Cuban and blasting the Mavericks for losing that series to the Warriors. Of course he is. So he goes straight to the radio station and goes straight on the air. And, you know, hey, here's what happened and this and that, and was answering all the questions, took phone calls. I give Mark a ton of credit for doing that, but he wanted his 2 cents in. He didn't want to call. He wanted to go straight into the studio, which he did. Right by my office, I'm like, what was that? There he is. He just comes walking right in. So nobody wanted to win more than he did. And he spent a ton of money, and there was no expense spared, but he expected a hell of a lot. Like, I ran that radio network, and he was telling me we had an affiliate. You know, we're in Texas, so all these small towns, we had maybe 25, 30 affiliates. We're trying to grow that thing. Might have been a little bit more. But, you know, you're in a football, like, Texas is football. And so when we'd go to some of these small markets and try to sell the Mavericks to some of these smaller stations, they're like, we run high school football on the weekends. We can't be playing no Mavericks games, you know, so that kind of stuff. And that was a big deal to Mark. So we would, you know, because he's competing with Jerry Jones. So, look, the dude was competitive. The guy wanted to win games, spent a ton of money. And so in a roundabout way, what I'm saying is Mark Cuban lost money in 21 of the 23 seasons. He spent millions, lost millions, but it was a passion for him. The Giants aren't willing to do that. The Niners, to an extent, aren't willing to do that, but they're going to be back on the horse. And the last 4 years, what they've spent, or the last 2 years or whatever it was, they spent the most money in the, I think it's the last four, they spent the most money payroll-wise in the NFL. So Jed York wants to win. He's just trying to kind of reset things financially, and then he'll go back at it. Mark Cuban did that in his Mavericks days, reset things financially. Remember, he traded Steve Nash, which was unpopular. He traded Jason Kidd, which was unpopular. There was things he did that financially he felt like he had to do. And Dallas is the fifth largest market in the country. San Francisco Bay Area is the fourth largest market in the country. So there's times where, yeah, you're a major market and you should act like it. But at times it's like, man, we're just bleeding money. We got to take a step back here. Everybody does that. Joe Lacob does it. The Dodgers did it in not lately, but they have. The Yankees have done it. All these major, the Red Sox have done it. When they traded Mookie Betts, they're like, we're just, you know, that's a major market. They decided, and they've never recovered from it. So it happens occasionally. But I would say the majority of owners in sports do not diehard want to win. And if I had to say, what is the majority of the owners? Majority of the owners are, this is just another business. And it's cool because look at all me and all my rich friends get to sit in a suite and all those kind of things. But the majority of owners in sports love having a team, but treat it like a business. Mark Cuban didn't. Joe Lacob doesn't. The Niners generally don't. The Giants do. That's just how it is. The A's absolutely positively do. That's just, you know, they're trying to get to Vegas for business reasons. I know John Fisher doesn't care about winning. And the fact that he's extending players now, he's just trying to make it look more pretty for Las Vegas. Like, look what we're doing. He's not doing it because he cares. He doesn't give a shit. He's a terrible owner. He's one of the worst. But you can't say to a guy, hey, because you're just treating your team like a business, we're going to run you out of the game, because that's the majority of owners. It's what they do. They're not willing to lose money 21 to 23 seasons. They're not willing to lose millions and millions of dollars because they have a business head. They have a business sense. And it just starts throwing alarms off in their head. Woo, 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 woo. We're losing money. We're losing money. Like, they won't do it. They won't spend over in line. Unless you give them a floor, some of them won't even spend to the floor. That's why they have to have a floor. Because these guys are like, no, if I don't spend to the floor, then I can just make money. I don't care. We'll be 500. The turnstiles turn. That's the Giants. That was the frustrating part when Larry Bear said that, when they're going to get this influx of money, was first thing out of his mouth, oh, we're going to make the facade. Willie Mays Plaza is going to look better, and these suites are going to be better. And it's like, could you at least lie? Could you at least be a better liar and just say, you know, we will put some money back into baseball operations. We want to be better. Like, nope. It's about going to the ballpark. The ballpark is the star. The turnstile is the star. The garlic fries are the star. The cha-cha bowl is the star. The view is the star. Those are our stars. And every once in a while, we'll throw you a Willie Adames to say, we're trying. But the majority of it is, look at this ballpark and look at the concessions. You know, give us your money. They got giant vacuum cleaners out. And they're trying to vacuum your money out of your pocket. It's like a baseball strip club. They just walk in and it's like, give us your money. They don't have strippers. They have cha-cha bowls. They don't have strippers. They have a great view. You know, that kind of a thing. They have, you know, Ghirardelli, they have beers, they have, you know, all these different things. that are just trying to get them out of your pocket. Look at these new jerseys. Oh, we got new City Connect jerseys. Those old ones, everybody had bought those that were going to buy them. They were ugly. And when they started losing in them, it was like, well, nobody's buying them anymore. What do we got to do? Let's come out with another City Connect. That, by the way, if the mock-ups are right, like this dark blue thing, why is it so hard? I don't mean to go on this tangent, and I had no idea I was going to. If that's true, like who's doing these jerseys? Stevie Wonder? I mean, my God, it cannot be that hard. We have a great tradition as a city in San Francisco. You can't find a bit like this dark navy, like kind of, what are we doing? You know, just do it within the colors of orange and black. People like that. And I don't know. We'll see. But from what I've seen, the mock-ups, they're just brutal. Brutal looking uniforms. I just don't understand it. Like an intern, like, we got to bring out a new jersey. Just have the intern do it. I don't want to do it. It's terrible. Anyway. Hey, J49er. Good to see you, man. Let's see. Yeah, absolutely. The Major League Baseball said, we got a floor. You got to spend. And so that's the only reason they did it. But they did it also because they're like, look, we're going to Vegas shortly. People have got to come out here in Sacramento, which, by the way, if they had, I'm going to go up there. They were talking about, you know, the Cubs in week number one. I'd love to see the Cubs play, but I don't think I'm going to go there week one. But, you know, I mean, they got to sell that park out. What is it, 15,000 or something like that? And they got lawn seats, all that kind of stuff. Like, I was watching last night. I'm watching, and I played that earlier. Marco Luciano hits that home run. Let me just pop that up one more time because people are digging that. But this is where the A's are going to play. Swing and a fly ball driven well to right. And you can see right there, that's a minor league park. Like, there's going to be people on that lawn for an A's game. And this is no knock on Sacramento. I've said this time and time again. Thank you. I've said this time and time again. It is no knock on Sacramento. Great city. Love it. Now, that's a minor league ballpark. And so when you see like Luciano hit that home run, he starts going around the bases. I mean, that looks like a minor league ballpark. And that's where they're going to be playing. I'm interested to hear what the players are going to say. I said this the other day. I lived in Detroit, right? And had a Super Bowl there, Super Bowl 40. And I was on Radio Row, and I would ask every single media member on the air. I was doing mornings in Detroit, and I said, well, what do you think of the Super Bowl in Detroit? And they're like, oh, God, we love it. Oh, it's so great. They felt bad for us. And it was snowing buckets in Detroit during the Super Bowl. And I stayed in a hotel one of the nights on a Friday night because there was an NFL party I wanted to go to, so we stayed in the city. And they cleaned it up as good as they possibly could. But I'm out there in a suit and a top coat and like a hat. My wife at the time is in this tiny little dress, and it is snowing buckets, and we're waiting in line, and we looked at each other like, do you want to wait in this or not? And we did. Wasn't worth it, but I mean, it was a terrible place to have a Super Bowl. It never came back. I mean, the Niners one, of course, was at the Pontiac Silverdome, but it was different then. Now it's a whole event. They would never bring it back there. No chance. I mean, I was at the one in New York that week, and it was freezing ass, and it's like they haven't had it back. And they got lucky because the next day when we were flying out, it was snowing buckets, and that's what they would have had for the Super Bowl on that Sunday. They just got lucky. They didn't snow on that Sunday, but then Monday was like, you couldn't get out of, we were flying out of JFK. You couldn't get out. It was just snowing. We're all sitting there going, oh my God, imagine if this was yesterday. Woo. Let's see. When you come up to the park, check out the park, let us know. And I'll be there. Oh, I live inside. Oh, very, very cool, man. Yeah. I'd love to see a bunch of people up there. And again, don't get me wrong. I love Sacramento. I'm not saying anything about it. If for some reason the Vegas thing didn't work out, and I'm certainly questionable that it will, and they build a major league stadium in Sacramento, I have no issue with that whatsoever. It's just that I think baseball should have had better foresight to not play in a minor league ballpark. And it's beautiful. I think earlier in the week, I popped up a picture that John Shea had put up there. And, you know, the sun's going down. It was an amazing picture. But it's a minor league ballpark, and they're playing major leagues in the minor league ballpark. So I will wonder, and I have a feeling that major league players are just going to bite through their lip and say nice things like they did in Detroit when I was working there, when the Super Bowl was there, but they don't want anything to do with it. But they fumbled the situation so poorly that this is what they've got. And like I said, this is no knock on the A's either, because like I said, without the Giants last night, I was flipping between the A's and the tournament, and they got a nice young team. Like if I was an A's fan, I'd be like, hey, Soderstrom and Butler and Jacob Wilson. And, you know, I mean, they got some interesting guys that come up to the plate. And Max Muncy hit his first career home run last night. No, not the Dodger. So, I mean, they're a cool team to watch. They're exciting. They got some young pieces. I mean, if I was a Giants fan, I think the Giants are better, but still, I look at the Giants and I go, hey, I'd like to have some of those young pieces. I'd like to have a Butler. I'd like to have a Wilson. I'd like to have some of those guys over there. They got some young players. Soderstrom, that's a nice pick. He looks good. All right. I had the 1-4-20. Yeah, I'm 100% going up there. There's no doubt. I'm 100% going to go up there because here I am going, and then if I go to the ballpark and I like it, then it's like, hey, you can change my opinion. Like if I go up there and I'm like, not bad, did a nice job. You know, I'm sitting here in my studio saying, don't like it. I haven't been up there. And so I'd love, you know, like I said, I'd love to go up to a Cubs A's game just because that's a major, you know, when you went to an A's game and you know this, at the end, especially because I didn't want to give my money to John Fisher. I just refused. My son's an A's fan his whole life. And the last 2 years they were there, even though it's, to me, it's a 20-minute BART ride from my house. And I didn't mind going to A's games. My son went, so I would go with him. And we went to a ton of them. But I was just like, no. And I know that it's the same thing, and he still owns the team. But I think I owe it to people to go up there and have a real opinion about what the stadium is. So, yeah, I don't love giving, you know, my shekels to John Fisher in some way, shape, or form. It's not because he's going to make a living off me. I'm going to go up there one time, a game that I want to see, a team that I want to see them play against. And that's the only reason I'm talking to Cubs is because when you go to an A's game, it would be three quarters of the other team a lot of times. Like Red Sox fans would take over that place. Yankees fans would take over that place. There's Cubs fans everywhere. So I'd love to see what kind of a turnout it is for a team like that, against a team like that, if that makes sense. All right. I think we've done enough. We went over it. We went an hour and a half, but I owed you. I'm getting hammered and getting ready to make my last bets. Let's go. Very nice. Best of luck. Thank you for the super, my friend. I hope everybody has a wonderful day. And I love that you checked this out on a Saturday. We're here on Saturdays, 10 a.m. I was here 10:30 today. Had a few things to do. And we got to run, play some golf, do all of those things. And then I got a bunch of work to do because my wife's coming home tomorrow. And, you know, house has got to be nice. House has got to be all, you know, done. Pine Needle is up in Reno. He's gambling. Hopefully you do well. Luck your way, my friend. Thank you so much for letting me in. I know you want a jackpot earlier today. So thank you for contributing to the show. It is always awesome when you do that. Vrock408, thanks for your contribution and a super today. Teams are going to go at Curry more, no doubt, as we get near the playoffs. Thanks, guys, for the supers today. Thanks to everybody for hanging out today on a Saturday. I know you got places to go, people to see, but you made the time for John Lund Unleashed today, and I cannot thank you enough for doing that. Let me just double check to make sure we don't have anything critical at the end that I have missed that somebody wanted to say. Let's see. Go enjoy yourself. You too, Pat H. I appreciate it, man. Kyle, the 1-4-20 Francis Fozzie. I didn't see you here today, so it's very nice to see you, my friend, late night. Pine Needle, Anthony, J49, all you guys, thanks for hanging out today. Thank you for making time on a Saturday. And again, John Lund Unleashed, please make sure you subscribe. Please, it's really important that you hit that like button. It helps the algorithm. So if you would hit that too, that would be tremendous. Have those alerts on. Any breaking news? We got just over 48 hours for Brandon Ayuk. Maybe something happens. I doubt it. But if it does, I'll jump right back on the air here. John Lund Unleashed on YouTube and the Bay Area Sports Collective. Thanks for watching on X today at John Lund Radio on Facebook and Twitch as well. Much appreciated. One more time, thanks to my good friend at Dr. Riopel and the Riopel Cosmetic Surgery and Laser Center. As I tell you, I am doing the low T. Please check it out. It is awesome. Quick blood test and then a procedure, and then you're good for months. You're going to feel better, I promise. And my wife is doing all the stem cell. Shoulder, she says, is at 90%. Elbows at about 60-70%, which she hasn't had for a long time. And she says even after 2 weeks, her foot is feeling amazing. And she goes through running shoes and all these different things. And so she says it's feeling great. Check out Dr. Riopel, Cosmetic Surgery and Laser Center. And they do so much more beyond that. So check out my good friends, fine sponsor of the program. And if you take care of them, they'll take care of me and I can take care of you. And it's this whole big circle, if that makes sense. All right, everybody have a wonderful Saturday. Thanks for making the time. Good luck. Everybody gambling up in Reno today. Very cool. And everybody have a tremendous Saturday. We'll hit you at 8 a.m. on Monday, unless something breaks. And then we'll be right back here. It's John Lund Unleashed. Have a great Saturday.
Thanks for hanging out with John Lund Unleashed. We'll try to be better next time, though I wouldn't hold my breath. Please like and subscribe on the John Lund Unleashed Pod YouTube channel. Watch live shows weekdays at 8 a.m. on YouTube, Instagram, and X. And make sure to have your alerts on for shows throughout the day or night. All things Lund can be found at johnlundunleashed.com. johnlundunleashed.com.
Goodbye!